This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Here's a cliche for you. The only constant is change. It's probably a cliche because it's true. In so many aspects of your life, change presents new opportunities and new challenges. And that's true of advocacy as well. Causes and movements shift gears and shift tones over time. Anu Paula is a champion of philanthropy and giving, is also the founder of Anu Vision Consulting. Hey, good morning, Anu. Thank you so much for making time to talk about this issue with us today.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm well. So listen, this conversation could go in a lot of directions, but let's start here. How has advocacy in the disability rights movement shifted and evolved over the years?
That's a great question, Dave. You know, advocacy has been on the forefront for many years, but what people advocated for in the disability rights movement was very different in the early 1900s and whatnot. You know, back in the day, people just advocated to be recognized as people. Now things have changed over time. In the early days, people were just advocating to have their disability recognized as part of their identity, not their sole, you know, person. Whereas now, I think with time, people have recognized as a result of all the groundwork and foundation that these advocates have put in place and advocated for, they've set that foundation. And so now it's more about just creating those opportunities to keep doing the education.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't as articulate, but basically it was really about, in those days, really just being recognized as people, as opposed to just being made a mockery of.
Yeah. I think this next question that I'm going to ask you, the answer is somewhat self-evident, but I think it's important to drill into a little bit. Why is it important that advocacy evolves?
Well, I think it's important that advocacy evolves because the needs evolve. Things have changed so much over the years. If you look at the education field, for example, back in the day, in the 50s and 60s, I don't believe there were really any services in place for students with disabilities. You know, for example, I recently did an interview with Betty Noble, who is an advocate, among other things, and she talked about her journey of being a student at UBC in the 60s and early 70s and the struggles that she had as a student. And so those days, there really weren't those services in place to even advocate for students. And, you know, whereas now, of course, we know that most post-secondary institutions and schools have some supports in place for students. So those needs have changed. I mean, technology has evolved, as you know, like immensely. And so, you know, we look at the technology needs that we have. And so it's really about ensuring that students have what they need to be successful, you know, in their education and of course, life moving forward.
So you mentioned that the grounds are going to change, right? What you need to advocate for are going to change, which means that goals are going to change in advocacy. And as those goals change and lived experience changes, do you think there might even be some generational or demographic divides in what people within a broader movement start to consider being a priority?
Yeah, definitely. When we look at the needs of older individuals with disabilities, those needs are different. So we look at seniors, for example, pension, access to affordable housing. I mean, some of these there are overlaps, of course. We know that people with disabilities overall live under the poverty line. So, of course, these are, you know, of course, there are some parallels here. But, you know, definitely healthcare, access to medication, being able to even access that in a way that they can do things independently. Whereas students, youth, and working age adults, their needs are going to be somewhat, or they may be somewhat different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, just in terms of wanting to have, I think employment is one area for sure, you know, the workplace, ensuring that workplaces are accessible and inclusive.
Yeah. You know, just last segment, one of our guests used the expression intersectionality, and I almost piped in to say, yes, that's going to be the theme of the hour, because a lot of these things do overlap, because sometimes progress isn't always linear, right? Sometimes individual communities within the disability rights movement may get a human rights victory before others in certain individual scenarios. So there are also movements within movements and allyships that form between communities. So how important is the fact that we consider intersectionality in the way we advocate? I know that can impact so many different people.
It's extremely important, Dave, because we need to ensure that we bring everyone's voices to the table. So when you look at intersectionality, look at those different layers. So we look at people of color, people from the LGBTQ plus community. We look at people with disabilities, and you have those overlaps. And so it's really important to ensure that we bring everyone's voices to the table so that so those voices are heard and included, so that we can actually create social change. We can't just do it with one group just making assumptions about what these people's needs are going to be. We have to have those voices at the table in a higher level.
Mm. And I know that when you and I were chatting earlier this week, we started talking about how something like, for example, racism can play into that, right? That someone might be experiencing a disability and racism all at the same time. Mm-hmm. The discrimination isn't always necessarily singular.
No, absolutely not. And that's often the case with immigrants. I've worked with refugees in the past who have come to this country for a better life, but the challenges that they experience, because there's so many layers and intersectionalities that are there. Not only are they a person of color, their socioeconomic status, of course, is impacts their ability to succeed and just to thrive, and let alone have a disability on top of that. So there's many different intersectionalities that come into play here.
Let's wrap up here by talking about where the intersection occurs with philanthropy, because because it's so important to think about that impact, because sharing messages and advocating is really important, but that does require resources. So I've got a bit of a theory here, a thesis statement, and you're welcome to shoot it out of the air if you want to. Can advocacy get derailed as different organizations within a singular movement start competing over fundraising dollars, volunteer hours, or other resources?
I think there are sometimes parallels in philanthropy and advocacy, and I think it comes down to messaging. So if I look at the Surrey Women's Center, for example, they are obviously advocating for justice, equality, and safety of women and girls. And if I look at the messaging that's often shared with donors on social media and other means of communications, they share the important pieces of that advocacy around why they do the work they do. But then there's that little push for donors to give to support that cause, you know, as well. So I think messaging plays a really big role. So it could actually work in their benefit. But of course, it really depends, you know, on sometimes there are certain campaigns that will take precedence over dollars. So, for example, the Movember campaign is coming up in November. And so that's a big plug for men advocating for men's health. But of course, there's going to be that promotion of organizations that support men's health. And I'm sure there'll be some philanthropy piece to that as well, to give to those types of organizations to support the research and those organizations who do that work, that advocacy work around promoting men's health.
Yeah, I've grown a couple terrible mustaches over the years to be part of the Movember movement and raised a dollar or two as part of that lunacy. So yeah, you know, that goes back to something we talked about one of the first times we spoke a few months ago, talking about how different campaigns can really tap into that creativity. And Movember really took the world by storm with sort of
Did.
Like just sort of a simple idea: grow facial hair.
No doubt, right? A simple concept, but look at how it's just come. It's just gone like wild, and I think that's awesome because being a creative person, I'm all about that. You know, it's about let's be creative and find some cool ways to promote a cause and raise the importance of it, and also raise some dollars as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Anu,
go ahead. I wanted to just give one really quick plug, actually. So there's a really great podcast that is out now called Triple Vision, and this actually highlights all the, you know, the work that's been done over the years and the people and who have set the foundation to allow us to do the work that we do in the disability advocacy realm. And so I really encourage people to listen to it. I just stumbled across it a couple of days ago, but I'm so grateful. I'm sure many of us are for all those trailblazers who did that groundwork and set the foundation, you know, for us to be able to do the work that we do.
Look at Triple Vision. Look at that perspective on the issue and some content recommendations. Anu, ticking all the boxes this morning.
I try.
Hey, well, thank you for getting up early for us out there on the West Coast to be part of this segment. Looking forward to catching up with you again in a few weeks.
Thank you so much, Dave. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.